This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Judy Norcigian, who's executive director of Our Bodies, Ourselves. Welcome to Utopia Media's California Politics Today.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you.
Why don't we dive right into this and let you express your concerns about the medical aspects of using Lupron and ovarian stimulation drugs to extract eggs from women for either IVF purposes or somatic cell nuclear transfer purposes?
Sure. Let me just begin by saying that our group is very supportive of most embryo stem cell research. We don't take a position in opposition to the stem cell research that involves using otherwise discarded embryos from IVF clinics, extracting stem cells from these embryos and doing important embryo stem cell research. Where we have very, very considerable concerns has to do with the very small subset of embryo stem cell research, often referred to as embryo cloning or research cloning, or the misnomered therapeutic cloning, because we're a long way from therapies, or the more technical term, somatic cell nuclear transfer.
Right. This is essentially where genetic material from an adult cell,
the nucleus,
is
put into an enucleated egg cell.
Right. Exactly. And so we're talking about now where those
egg
cells come
from.
Right.
So our particular concern has to do with multiple egg extraction that usually involves younger women volunteers who already provide multiple eggs in IVF clinic settings for either themselves or other women who want to have a baby and are seeking out infertility services for one reason or another. Because of SCNT, there's renewed attention to this larger question of risks to women's health from multiple egg extraction procedures. And what these procedures involve is first shutting down the ovaries with a GnRH agonist, something like Lupron, which you mentioned earlier.
Right.
And then you have controlled stimulation of the ovaries with some of these hyperstimulatory drugs.
How much hyperovulation is generated by this process?
Well, it's very interesting because different women respond differently to the same amount of drug.
Right.
And some women, you'll produce 4, 5, 6 eggs. Some women, especially younger women, tend to produce, some of them, 10 to 20 eggs.
Right.
And one of the things we know now is that the degree to which you respond is somewhat related to age, so that younger women tend to produce more eggs.
Right.
And along with that tendency to produce more eggs, your ovaries get more stimulated, is also a greater likelihood to develop something called ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome.
Right.
Which is a known problem. In most cases, when you're monitored carefully, you can withdraw the drugs, you can get treatment, and you don't experience some of the more severe consequences. Several dozen women have died from ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. Most of this, probably if caught early enough, could have been tended to, and a death would not have happened. One of the things that people don't often realize, though, is that not all OHSS, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, happens during that period immediately after you're given the drug. Sometimes there's a delayed onset. It might even be 2 or 2.5 weeks later, and your medical monitoring might not be very good at that point. So that's a very real risk that women, whether they're undergoing multiple egg extraction procedures for an IVF clinic setting or for a somatic cell nuclear transfer, should think about. The concern that we have also has to, and this is something you mentioned earlier, has to do with drugs like Lupron, in particular Lupron, which is on the market for several approved uses, the treatment of prostate cancer, the palliative treatment of prostate cancer in men, also for fibroid-associated anemia in women, and also for endometriosis in women. But the use for which it's most commonly known, which is in this IVF clinic setting, is all off-label use. It's not a use that the FDA has vetted formally and given its stamp of approval for.
So there have been no trials, these phase
no,
one, phase two,
I don't
phase three trials to get Lupron approved as a hyperovulation drug.
Yes, we do know that Takeda Abbott Pharmaceuticals, known as TAP, probably around a decade ago, maybe a little bit more, did begin such a trial and did have the intention of seeking this new indication from the FDA. Something like 2 years into the trial, it was stopped. The results have never been published, so nobody really knows what they were learning.
Has your group or anyone else, to your knowledge, asked them to publish those results?
No, because we know what the answer would be. People who've done this before,
right?
It's proprietary.
I visited their site, this TAP Pharmaceutical Products Inc. And it, as you said, it mentions prostate cancer, endometriosis, and uterine fibroids, and even central precocious puberty as conditions that it's authorized by the FDA to treat. But there, I saw no mention of hyperovulation on their site.
No, well, this is suppression. This is not the other drugs
for
hyperstimulation,
right.
And those are approved for this kind of use. Even though there are known risks, we know what the risks are.
Okay.
I just described OHSS.
Right.
But the real problem with Lupron is that we do not have good data with which we could get what I would call adequate informed consent from any woman who's undergoing these procedures. And it's that we've been asking for, and it's that we've basically suggested to anyone who is proposing stem cell legislation or who has been proposing that more research be done in this area to really call for or require better data before SCNT goes forward, because you cannot get informed consent from young women because we don't have the data.
Okay, and in fact, there is proposed legislation sponsored by Senators Feinstein, Harkin, Hatch, Kennedy, and Specter that would expand embryonic stem cell research and the ability to do that kind of work.
Yes,
and is that to which is that legislation to which you'd like to see attached these requirements for more release of this data and in order to generate a proper informed consent procedure?
We would like to see all public policy recognizing the lack of data on these particular drugs and calling for the data to be collected before large numbers of women undergo multiple egg extraction. In the meantime, what you can do if you want to do some SCNT is you could offer natural cycling for people who want to donate an egg. Occasionally there'll be twinning, so there'll be two eggs.
Right.
And in those cases, there are some risks of the procedure. We know what they are. They're fairly minimal. And obviously, one egg is not an ideal situation, but it doesn't entail risks that we cannot really adequately describe to the woman involved.
Right.
The other thing is, if a woman is doing this in an IVF clinic and is likely to produce 10 eggs or so, primarily for reproductive purposes, she might be asked if she would like to set aside 3 eggs, you know, or a few eggs to be used for research. And the rest would go to couples seeking IVF services.
Right.
The woman who's doing multiple egg extraction isn't doing it just for research purposes, but primarily for reproductive purposes. So she's not undergoing the risk solely for research.
Right. So this would be, there are essentially three situations in which women would be having this egg extraction. One would be where they are doing it for their own fertility, so they can themselves conceive a child. A second is where they're selling their eggs to, or
they're
giving
not selling,
away their.
Remember, no well, selling is allowed. They're being paid a certain amount for their services.
No, I'm talking.
Although
I'm talking about
see the $50,000 ads. That sounds like selling, but nobody's calling it that.
They're calling it reimbursement of expenses.
Yeah, or they're calling it for your time and inconvenience, but nobody's saying you're selling your eggs because actually that's prohibited.
But being reimbursed $20,000 or $50,000 for your time is not selling.
It's a dubious area. Many have said that really is over the top. It's clearly selling. If you try to call it something else, that's stretching it. But it hasn't been challenged anywhere that I know of.
Okay,
we actually saw an ad that was approaching $100,000.
Well, that may be important because, in particular, for example, there's pending legislation SB 18 here in California that Senator Deborah Ortiz has put forward.
Yes, I know about that.
And an important part of that says, and in fact it seems to me an important part of all of these legislation says that women can't be paid for these eggs. But from what you've just said, that women are reimbursed for their time.
Well, no. Under those particular bills,
they
are going to actually clamp down, and they will probably have caps. And they'll probably name the cap, and it'll be more in the $4,000 to $6,000 range, I bet. Three to six, something like that. They will not allow large sums. Mind you, when they do these surveys of younger women and ask them why they do it, compensation is only one reason, and it's usually not sufficient. Altruism is another motivating factor.
Right.
It's the combination of both that is attractive to young women. I don't think they would do it just out of altruism, with some exceptions, nor just for the money. And some of them do understand there are risks involved, but they feel very passionate about enabling someone else to become a biological parent.
Okay, because I've tried to pin down some of the politicians on this about what the reimbursement would be, and they were decidedly vague.
No, they are at this point. And the other thing I want to say about the bill in California is that originally, I think Senator Ortiz was trying to put in a moratorium.
Yes, she was.
For SENT, which I thought was a great idea, because we needed to collect this data so that we could get informed consent. And she got pretty stiff opposition from most of the reproductive health professionals. I don't think they want to suggest at all that there's anything inappropriate about asking young women to undergo the risks of multiple egg extraction, since, of course, they're doing it in a widespread fashion already in the IVF clinics. I think you can make a case that you know, when you look at the risk-benefit ratio arguments,
right,
that whether it's for you or for another woman, because the IVF clinics are doing better success-wise,
right,
somebody, you know, has a 30 to 40% chance of having a baby as a result of your donating eggs.
Right.
And that is a clear benefit for which maybe you can argue even unknown risks are worth taking.
Right.
But when you're talking about somatic cell nuclear transfer just for research now,
right,
and you're at the early stages of embryo stem cell research, where we don't even know if stem cell therapies are viable. We still don't, we haven't, you know, conquered the problems with tumorigenicity and inability to control cell differentiation, all of those things that are have to be overcome in
right.
order to develop these therapies that would be compatible with one's own immune system. That it seems to me that you probably want to be further along down the pike on developing those stem cell therapies before you can make the strong case for SENT going forward.
So you're essentially saying that there's some kind of a distinction that ought to be made between either women undergoing this for their own sake to conceive a child, or doing it for the sake of other women to conceive a child, and doing it for the sake of embryonic stem cell research.
Right. I think that when you're looking at risk-benefit ratio, the benefit is a really distant grasp at this point when we're looking at research. And we put this point in the new Our Bodies Ourselves edition that we just produced.
Right.
It's very important that women understand that this is a far distant benefit, if it's even going to be a benefit. In the IVF context, it's a real benefit about 30% of the time.
Right. I don't want to get too far out of the box, but this is an irony that keeps popping up here. If women were contributing their eggs for the purposes of reproductive human cloning, in which their egg would not be destroyed to get the stem cells, but would be implanted as a human clone within a woman, would that fall back into the category that you were talking about now, about where there's a 30 or 40% chance that there's going to be a child?
No. You have to, when you talk about human reproductive cloning, you are talking about massive unethical experimentation, and there is not a scientist I know who would defend anybody engaging in human reproductive cloning.
Okay.
If you just look at what happened in the animal world,
right,
and we've got lots of data on this,
right,
you're going to have enormous numbers of tragic outcomes. It's one thing to do this with animals. It's
right.
another thing to try to do this with humans.
So we're
totally opposed to any human reproductive cloning. We think it's unethical from the get-go.
And always will be?
And always will be.
Okay.
And we also want to point out that human germline genetic modifications that are also being suggested by some, you know, having
right.
children with blue eyes and tall genes and all of
that's
that.
That's right.
That also is unacceptable. I mean,
now and forever.
Yes, because you're engaging in a kind of experimentation where you cannot predict all of the outcomes, and these are not somatic therapies like we saw with Jesse Gelsinger, where if you make a mistake, it ends with the person.
Right.
When you're tampering with the germline, it is extended to all future generations.
Right.
And so it's a different order of experimentation.
Is that shading over into eugenics or something
obviously this is a eugenics application when
right.
you're talking about, you know, controlling the characteristics of your offspring. This is totally eugenics.
Right.
But the question is that you can't just get the good things necessarily that you want. You might get some really serious problems to boot, because there's a lot about, you know, gene transcription. There's a lot we don't understand
right.
about how this will work.
Does that opposition extend both to what we could call enhancements versus removing of impediments if there's any Huntington's chorea.
When it comes to curing a disease,
right.
You're dealing with particularly with conditions that are incompatible with a long life,
right.
Conditions that cause great disability.
Tay-Sachs, for example.
Well, Tay-Sachs is huge because
right.
You won't live past 2.5. But I'm even
right.
Thinking about extraordinarily disabling conditions.
Right.
Or conditions that will ensure that you don't live past 20 or
right.
30. You know, there are many conditions
fibrosis.
For which a medical cure
right.
Or a therapy
right.
Would be an improvement. And for the most part, these don't involve tampering with the germline, although to some extent that may happen because there's a lot we don't understand. But you're dealing here with a clear and important benefit, which is ameliorating human suffering.
I'm sorry, are you talking about the acceptability of germline?
No, I'm talking about the therapies that would be developed
therapies.
With somatic cell nuclear transfer.
Right. No, I was asking whether you believe that if a genetic cause of a life-threatening disease is discovered and the technology exists to snip it out, to modify it at the embryonic level, whether that's an appropriate application of technology and whether you'd support that.
Well, this is getting into very technical discussion. Some would
right.
And some wouldn't. And
right.
I think a lot of this can be done without
right.
Tampering with the germline because
right.
You can go in and basically perform techniques that would ameliorate the situation without tampering with the germline.
Okay.
So, but the question of tampering with the germline is one that needs much more discussion before we embrace it. Even for therapeutic reasons, we need to. In that case, we probably want more study, more evidence of benefit, and evidence that we will probably not induce harm. That would require much more animal data,
okay.
For example.
All right. Who's Suzanne Parisian, and what's her contribution to this discussion?
Dr. Suzanne Parisian is a former chief medical officer at the Food and Drug Administration who has provided a 3-page summary of her concerns, basically suggesting that the risks that women must undergo in order to carry out multiple egg extraction are substantial enough that there should be extreme caution exercised here. And so she would probably, although I'm not sure that, I think she would support this idea of the moratorium that Senator Ortiz was introducing. And
are you or people associated with you actively pursuing that as a political goal, that moratorium?
Well, we don't do direct lobbying right now. We may in the future, so we're not
right.
Pursuing anything of this sort. But we have, as a matter of public policy, just made general statements about the need to be much more cautious.
Okay.
And we do say that if one does need to pursue SCNT, the eggs should be gathered through these other means, you know, an ovariectomy, single, you know, natural cycling, or possibly getting a few eggs when a woman is providing eggs for an IVF clinic.
Okay. One of the reasons that somatic cell nuclear transfer is touted by its proponents is because of the ability to take the genetic material from an adult who has a rare disease.
Yes.
And so on.
Yes, that is one of the immediate benefits from doing SCNT. Our position is that that's true, but that we do not yet see that those benefits offset what could be hugely enormous risks for women, and we don't know them yet. We want to see the data collected first.
Do you think that that enough of that research could be done on with excess IVF generated embryos?
No. That's totally different.
No, I understand that, but I mean, some of the people who have done that do have some of those genetic diseases.
Yes.
Then you could do it that way. Do you think that will provide enough, or in order to do really serious, extensive work on the process of maldevelopment of the cells,
yes.
it's necessary to do SCNT?
Yes. We believe that you can learn a lot from getting these particular embryos, which would never be implanted because
right.
They actually have these known problems,
right.
Studying them. And it does provide the same kind of opportunity to study a less common disease. It isn't perfect, because if you're looking at a particular disease and there's nobody who's been in an IVF clinic with that disease,
right.
you don't have those embryos.
Right.
So it's not a perfect solution, but it certainly is a partial solution.
Okay.
And it certainly ought to be the way we go until we have better data on risks of multiple egg extraction.
Okay. Now, I always like to let people speak on their own behalf, but since I haven't been able to get a good answer yet about this, I'm wondering if you have any comments about what pro-life people want done with excess IVF-generated embryos when they don't want them to be used for embryonic stem cell research. What do they want to have done with
them? Well, many have suggested that couples or women that are not going to use embryos that they have produced,
right.
or women who are giving embryos to a couple and then the couple and the woman don't want to use them, that they be donated to other couples.
And is there a market for that? Are there couples who would want to use those excess embryos?
Of course. Absolutely. There are couples who would very much appreciate being given an embryo that someone else is not going to use so that the woman could have the biological experience of pregnancy and birth. And that is happening right now as we speak.
Are there clearinghouses being set up to bring together couples who want embryos and clinics and individuals who have generated excess ones?
I cannot remember if I've read about a formal clearinghouse. I know this is going on informally.
Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about the demographics of all this and the numbers. From your information, how many eggs are typically needed to create one viable stem cell-generating embryo?
Well, it varies enormously. Remember what happened in Korea.
Right. 242 eggs from 16 women to get one human
right.
Clone.
So that's, those are pretty substantial numbers. There are also some questions about how they got those eggs that are not fully understood, but
right.
we're talking about lots of eggs to get one stem cell line.
Right.
That's
now,
for sure.
Have you been in touch with, or there in Boston is a woman named Betty Poirier, who's a state representative in the Massachusetts legislature.
Yes, she's
the one who referred me to talk to you originally.
Right.
And she wrote a piece calling for a lot more concern about the possible exploitation of women for their eggs.
Right.
Are you familiar with her argument? How do you feel about
it? I am, and she's not the only one there. I met actually with a few women who were very concerned about this potential exploitation of women.
Right.
I actually think that is probably not as significant an issue as the true health risks to women are.
How do you distinguish that between the health risks?
What they're concerned about is that many women will be encouraged to do this because of payments.
Right.
And particularly if they're poor.
Right.
The women of color. And I think for the most part it's going to still be college-age women who end up being reached and who end up doing this.
Because as you said, you think that the motivation for doing this is usually a mix of altruism
right.
and desire to have some money.
And also, I think that's a group that will embrace the scientific endeavor, will be likely less suspicious of
right.
clinical trials, as you know, especially since, the Tuskegee experiment.
Yes, right.
happened, and the legacy of much research
right.
in terms of the impression communities have of medical research. It's not always positive.
Right.
So you're not going to get women from every community wanting to participate in this kind of research. I think in the college age group, you're going to get more receptivity, the very idea, the money, and the altruism is, of course, important as well. So, I mean, I know the concern among some women, too, is that they will take this whole enterprise overseas and collect large numbers of eggs from poor women in developing countries.
Right. Are you worried about that very much?
Well, it's a possibility. I think it's not likely to be a scenario, but who knows? That's always a possibility. It's not the basis for setting public policy, in my mind, as much as the other issues are.
Okay, which is essentially...
We have very solid guidance here and
right.
guidelines here, and I think that we are basically flying in the face of what IRBs are supposed to be doing in terms of protecting human research subjects if we allow...
Institutional review boards.
Right, that's right, institutional review boards.
Right.
And, I have talked to IRB chairs who have said we do allow people to engage in research even when there's a risk of death.
Do you think it's appropriate for the women who contribute the eggs to have any ongoing rights in the intellectual property that's generated by their contribution?
appropriate, I don't think that's the best word. I think a person may want that and may request that. They probably won't get it.
Well, the California law explicitly rules it out.
That's right. There are many people who don't want that to happen. I think, you know, from my point of view, the protection of these women, like, for example, that those who undergo, who basically carry out the multiple egg extraction have to be different from the caregivers.
Right.
The people who give the medical care for these women. I also agree with the position of the Center for Genetics and Society in that anybody conducting this research should be committing to providing the medical expenses for any untoward consequences. That these women should not have to spend out of pocket, especially in an era when so many women are uninsured,
right,
for any problems that may result from undergoing multiple egg
extractions. Well, what's the status? In other words, if any problems do develop, the extractors of the eggs ought to be financially responsible for that
medical expenses.
For those medical expenses.
Yes, but that's not the case right now.
Do you know if SB 18 in California provides for that or excludes that?
Where
it says you give us your eggs, you're on your own afterwards.
I believe they're working that out now. I don't think it's cast in stone yet.
You would think, though, that that's an important
yes,
provision.
Yes, we would take that position that they should be covered.
Okay.
No woman should be asked to be participant in this research without making sure all of the medical expenses that she may have to incur as a result of problems that they will be covered.
And say a little bit more about the need to have a doctor involved whose principal or sole interest is the woman's health and not the success of the experimental procedures.
Well, because of obvious conflict of interest problems. Remember what happened with Jesse Gelsinger.
I don't know all the details, but
people
were more interested in
the person who was his physician had a financial interest in the therapy being tested.
And so you think that ought not to be allowed?
No, I don't think it should be allowed. And then the other thing is it should be divulged whenever there is such a potential conflict of interest. The parents of Jesse Gelsinger knew nothing about this financial interest.
Right. Okay. Let's sort of wrap up by giving you a chance to relate these issues that we've been talking about here within the larger context of what you've been trying to do with our bodies ourselves and raise the level of awareness and respect for women's rights in the medical context. Are things in a better point of perspective from your view now than they were in 1970 when you got started? And do you think some of the work that you've and the collective have done have contributed to a better atmosphere to respect the rights and prerogatives of women here or not?
I think there is greater awareness about the importance of asking questions and getting answers and not simply assuming that because a physician or a researcher says it's a good thing, that it is a good thing.
Right.
We're very excited about the section on emerging biotechnologies that discuss embryo cloning and embryo stem cell research and human germline genetic modifications, the effects on future generations. This is not only a very important addition to this new edition of Our Bodies Ourselves, but we've got material at the website companion to the book that expands upon this content and leads to a select number of websites that are providing crucial information. And most of the media coverage, the headline coverage, is not coming from these very carefully evidence-based, discussions. They're coming from, PR firms for the biotech industry that want the public to be clamoring for any and all stem cell therapies to be pursued without attention to some of these very critical moral and ethical issues and safety issues that we've been raising. So we actually have a whole piece on the risks of multiple egg extraction that we have at our website, for example.
Okay, what's the URL for that website?
Our website is just ourbodiesourselves.org. It's all run on.
Okay, and we'll put a link to that along with this interview on our page as well. All right, well, I want to thank you very much for talking to us today on California Politics Day about this important issue and wish you continued success with your various educational and publishing efforts.
Well, thanks very much, Mark.
Okay,
yes.
Talk to you later.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.